Craft Beer Radio, version 0.9.
Welcome to Craft Beer Radio, the show dedicated to craft beer and the craft brewing industry. My name is Greg Weiss.
And I'm Jeff Baer.
And on today's show, we're going to be talking about two double IPAs, the 90-minute IPA from Dogfish Head Craft Brewery and Stout's double IPA from Stout's Brewing Company. We're also going to be discussing a little bit of craft brewing history and talk about craft brew.
Yes, we are. This is our first episode. We're going to try to work out the banter here so we don't sound like two stiffs.
Probably a little too late for that in the first episode, but we'll see how it goes.
Exactly. Okay, two beers we were trying tonight are double IPAs. A double IPA is a creation of the American craft brew industry. We keep mentioning these craft brew industry. I probably should give a little definition of what that is.
Probably.
The craft brewing industry started a little over 20 years ago by Fritz Maytag starting Anchor Brewing Company. It was the first microbrewery in the country, and they set themselves apart by selling...
This was in California, right?
Yes, in California. Set themselves apart by selling more flavorful and different beers than what was on the market.
Which, traditionally, on the market, you see, like, your Budweiser and your Coors. These are all Pilsner-style lagers, but they're adjuncts. They're made with rice, and they're made with corn and other things besides the standard hops and barley, which is what beer is traditionally made from.
Right, and these beers typically have... I don't want to bash the macro brewery, but, you know, they tend to have a lot of the, lacking a lot of the flavor that even the European versions of the same kinds of beer have. I would almost call a lot of these American breweries like Budweiser pale American lagers instead of, American Pilsners.
Yeah, I mean, you can't really bash them because, in a sense, it's very, very hard to brew the kind of beer they're brewing. It's a very difficult process, and it takes a lot of standards and very, very specific guidelines. But part of the reason is that there's so little taste there that any little thing that comes through will totally ruin it.
And if you haven't been able to tell so far, Greg and I like lots of flavor in our beer.
Absolutely.
And tonight we're going to be drinking one of the more flavorful and in-your-face styles out there, the double IPA. Double IPA, like I started to say, was a creation of the American microbrewing, craft brewing industry, where they were taking the traditional IPA that was started in England and supercharging it, adding a lot more hops than any respectable British brewer would ever do. And let's give you a little bit of history on the IPAs. It's one of the more interesting beer histories. One of the more interesting styles in beer history.
You know, when people always look at IPAs I'm drinking, they say, India Pale Ale, is that from India? And, of course, you have to explain the whole thing. And this is the one beer description I think people really find interesting because it dates back hundreds of years, goes all the way back to colonial times, and it gives you an idea of other stuff that was happening at the same time. So go ahead, Jeff.
Yep, history lesson in beer as of sorts. As you know, in the
1600s, 1500s, Marco Polo around that time. Which, you know, we're not history students, so
yes,
we may get these dates wrong.
We forget the date, but when Britain was colonializing India, they had a bunch of soldiers there, and they liked their British beer. But in order for the brewers to get the beer on the long ship ride all the way around the Horn of Africa, they had to make the beers stronger and hoppier. The hops is a natural deterrent to bacteria infection, and when these beers were going to be in casks in ship's hulls for 9 months or more, they needed to make a hoppier beer so it would be fresh and not spoiled when it arrived at its destination in India.
This is one of the only things they really had to drink on these ships at the time.
Yeah.
It was mostly just beer, because they obviously couldn't drink seawater, and they didn't really have a distilling process down for getting the salt out of seawater, so they drank beer.
Exactly.
A lot.
So the India Pale Ale was an export-only beer to India, but when the soldiers came home, they had developed a taste for these extra hoppy beers and demanded that the India Pale Ales be available domestically. And that's the history of the India Pale Ale.
And fine one it is.
All right. And...
And like you said, the double IPA is basically a super hopped up version. So even more hops, even more bitter.
Yeah, it's not a beer for beginners. If you found our show and you like drinking Coors Light or even Sam Adams and Yingling, this is not a good starter beer. this one's going to make you pucker up, and you may even spit it out, but we love it. It's hops are definitely acquired taste.
Absolutely.
Greg didn't like hops for the longest time, and then one day, flipped the switch.
I started essentially with brown ales, which are more malty, and got into the darker beers like porters, brought myself into Belgians, because I sort of like the sweetness of them, and it really took me a while to get used to the hoppy taste. But after a while, it really picked up, and now one of my favorites is actually from Dogfish Head, called the 60-Minute IPA, which is a regular IPA, also continually hopped like this one. We'll describe that in a little bit.
Sure. One thing I want to mention before we crack this beer open is the serving guidelines. If you're into craft beer, you know that you typically don't drink the beer straight out of the bottle, because the bottle with the small opening doesn't let you enjoy the aroma of the beer. So we always drink our beers out of glasses. And for different kinds of beers, different kinds of glasses are optimal to accentuate the particular attributes of the beer. For this one, the Imperial IPA, we're going to drink it out of brandy snifters. You could also use a large oversized wine glass, but the large bowl in the glass is going to collect the aroma so we can enjoy it while we're drinking the beer.
And there's hardly an aroma I can think of that's better than the aroma of hops.
Right. Also, you want to be drinking this beer at between 50 and 55 degrees. You know, not everyone's going to have a thermometer that they want to stick in their beer. So we would say, take the beer out of your fridge and let it sit on the counter for about 15 minutes before you pour it into your glass.
And now we're going to open it up. Here it is.
This is the Dogfish Head 90-Minute IPA.
Now, is this one bottle conditioned?
I believe so, but I'll let you know in just a moment.
All right.
Want to explain what bottle conditioning is? Sure,
absolutely. Typical macro brews and other brews, even most microbrews, are conditioned outside the bottle. There, you inject CO2 into the beer at pressure to make it carbonated. Whereas bottle conditioning means you put extra yeast into the beer as you bottle it, and then let it carbonate on its own under pressure.
Okay, this beer, in fact, is not bottle conditioned. It is filtered. The way you can tell if a beer is bottle conditioned is if you look in the bottle when it's empty, if there is some yeast at the bottom, it is bottle carbonated. But this one is nice and clean. I'm kind of startled that Dogfish had filtered this beer, but not completely surprised.
So initially, you know, the first thing you want to do is you want to take a sniff of the beer, swirl it around in your glass a little bit. And I'm certainly smelling some hops and also a little bit of sugariness there.
Yes, the aroma isn't, like some hops you'll get a really citrusy and floral aroma. This one is a little more earthy.
Yeah, I agree.
And you do smell some of the sweetness. It's a 9% alcohol beer. So it's a high gravity, so there's still a fair amount of residual sugars in there, too. So you're going to get a little leftover sweetness.
Now, it's a dark amber, and the head is small, but it's staying there. It's definitely staying with it. It's not exactly frothy, but it doesn't dissipate immediately. And now take a sip.
Okay. In the flavor, it is a rather... sweet beer.
Absolutely.
It has... I need to take another sip so I can refresh my memory. It has a little bit of dry finish, but it has a sweet beginning and middle through the taste.
I'm tasting a lot of grapefruit. Is the number one taste, I think, comes to mind. It's a good beer. It almost tastes a little syrupy. I think because of the fact it's a double.
Yeah. You have the high alcohol. And like I said, whenever you have a high alcohol beer, you also tend to have a high residual amount of unfermentable sugars, which makes it a sweeter beer. And this one certainly tastes that way. One thing I wanted to mention, Greg said it tastes a little grapefruity. That's one of my favorite flavors from hops. And it is slightly grapefruity. I know what the next beer we're having tastes like, and that one is really grapefruity. So it was harder for me to pick the grapefruit out of this one, but it is certainly a nice-tasting beer.
absolutely. It goes down easy. Has a very nice mouthfeel. Isn't too harsh. At the same time, you can definitely taste the carbonation.
All right, a little bit of information about Dogfish Head Craft Brewery. They're out of Milton, Delaware. They've been around since 1995. They brew approximately 20,000 barrels of beer a year. A barrel is 32 gallons of beer. 20,000 barrels of beer a year is significant. The top end for the classification of microbrewery is 30,000 barrels a year, barrels of beer a year.
And they distribute pretty much all over. There's very few places in the U.S. that they don't get to.
Yeah, they do everything in the Northeast. The Southeast is a little spotty. You can get them in North Carolina and Florida. You can get them in Texas, Kentucky, Tennessee, Ohio, Wisconsin, Michigan. That's in the middle part of the country.
Doesn't seem to go to the West Coast. I don't see California.
There's Washington, Oregon, Arizona.
Oh, okay.
And it's also available in Puerto Rico, Canada, and one distributor in the United Kingdom.
Wow.
Yep. So, yeah, when I looked that up when I was preparing the notes for this beer, I was a little surprised that there were so many states you could get Dogfish Head in. I actually met the brewer, Sam Caligione, a couple weeks ago. He was in town kicking off a book tour for his new book, Brewing Up a Business.
Jeff forgot to invite me.
Yes.
Oh, well.
I felt horrible the next day when I told Greg, and he was like, why didn't you tell me? I'm like, I forgot. But anyway, it was a great night. We got to taste some of his beers paired with different courses for dinner. Each of the courses was also prepared with his beer. And he came over and talked to all of us, and he read several passages out of his book. If you're interested in finding out more about this book, it's Brewing Up a Business, and you might be able to find some information on their website, dogfish.com, but I know it is definitely on amazon.com.
Back to the beer. I'm definitely, in terms of finish, there's a bitterness to the finish. It lingers on for a little bit, and then kind of gets a little hoppy at the end.
Certainly does. One thing that I really like to do, and I mentioned at dinner, is we pair food with beer and also cheeses with beer.
Right.
And some of the food that I like to eat with a nice hoppy IPA would be barbecue, but in particularly, I really have a soft spot in my heart for Indian food with these IPAs. I don't know if it's subconsciously because of the name, but I just think when I have a nice hot...
curry or something
curry,
like that.
You know, I love chickpeas, so whatever whatever the chickpea dish is, you get that nice and spicy and drink one of these IPAs with it, and it's a nice match.
I'm thinking a good vindaloo is one of my favorite, which is really a spicy cilantro curry. That would really go well with this.
And also with cheeses, you match subtle cheeses with subtle beers and pungent or spicy cheeses with spicy and in-your-face beers like this one. Mm-hmm. And with this, you would typically pair it with cheeses like a blue cheese, a Limburger, a Gorgonzola, or something like a Monterey Jack.
I can see that.
Like I mentioned before, but not all by itself, their website is dogfish.com.
Which was actually hard for me to find because I know that I was looking around for Dogfish Head, dog-fish head. I didn't know when I was originally trying to find a beer.
Fish heads, roly-poly fish heads.
And but it is a relatively good site. I don't remember much about it, so it's not sticking out in my head as an amazing site.
Yeah, it's not highly produced. I mean, it's not a very expensive website, but it has all the information. You can get great descriptions of the beers. And speaking of their beers, both Greg and I have had many of the Dogfish beers, and let's mention some of their more outstanding ones.
Well, I mentioned previously the 60 Minute, which is also we should mention this beer is continually hopped, which is slightly different than other the process in which other beers are produced. And Jeff, you could explain that?
Sure. Typically, when you brew some beer, there are three components that the hops add to the beer. There's the bitterness, and when you're brewing a beer, you add those at the beginning of the boil. Say you're doing a 60-minute boil, like the 60-minute IPA, or a 90-minute, as this beer we're drinking now. You would add some hops at the beginning, and then you wouldn't add any until the very end. About 10 minutes before the end, you would add some, and then you could add some more at the very end after you stopped boiling the beer. Those later two editions of hops give you the flavor and the aroma. These Dogfish 60, 90, and 120 minute hopped IPAs are continually hopped. They have a little gadget over the brew kettle called Sir Hops-A-Lot, and it continually trickles hops into the brew kettle. It gives you a couple different characteristics to this beer. The beer has a higher overall bitterness than other beers do, because you're getting a continual string of beers at the head end of the brew there instead of just one addition. So it gives you, and it also gives you a nice full flavor and aroma at the end, because instead of small additions towards the very end, the last, say, 20 to 15 minutes of hop additions are adding to the flavor. The stuff added at 20 minutes are just about boiled away, the flavor part of it, so you're not getting much, but think of it ramping up to the very end, so you're getting a very full hop flavor at the end of the beer.
It's very very straightforward hoppiness you get when you drink these continually hopped beers. And I don't know of any other brew company that does this.
I wasn't able to find which hops they use in this beer, but they're not too in-your-face hoppy. There's a lot of them, but they're not by themselves very acidic or very pungent. I would guess that they're like a Cascade or a Centennial, one of the popular American West Coast hops. Some of the other Dogfish Head beers that are really interesting. They have two really strong beers that are amongst the world's strongest beers. They have one called the 120-minute IPA. It's kind of like this 90-minute, but instead of just adding hops for another 30 minutes, they also add a lot more sugars, so it's a lot more alcoholic once it's fermented out. It is at 21% alcohol, where the world's strongest beer is at 25, and it's like the second, it's like the third or fourth highest alcohol beer in the world.
And it is quite a kick on that one.
It's a, you think, oh, 120-minute IPA, all these hops, but you need that much hops to balance out how much malt they put in the beer to build up the alcohol. So it's actually on the sweet side, and I don't find it very hoppy. It's a very interesting beer, and it's quite affordable for the price. It's about $10 a bottle, but if you look at the world's strongest beer, the Sam Adams Utopias, they want over $100 a bottle.
Now, is the 120-minute, is that carbonated, or is that non-carbonated like the Utopia?
No, it is carbonated. Okay. But the higher the alcohol, the less you're going to notice it, and it's not going to be as fizzy and bubbly, but it's still carbonated. Another one of their beers is very similar, alcohol-wise, is their Worldwide Stout. This year's Worldwide Stout came in at 18%. The years before it was 23%, but I've tasted both, and the 18% was much better. And when I talked with Sam at that dinner, he said they intentionally dialed back the alcohol because they liked the character of the 18% alcohol Worldwide Stout better. Again, it's a very sweet beer. It's definitely want to drink it out of like a brandy sniffer or something like that. And you don't chug these beers. You enjoy them. You let them warm in your hand, and you basically enjoy the aroma for as long as you can until the beer's gone.
Also, you may have heard of their Raison d'Etre, which is it's a Belgian style made with raisins. It's very sweet. I guess it would be closest to a double, would you say?
Yeah, I've only had it once, about a week ago, and I wasn't reviewing it, so I don't remember all the characters to it. I was in the middle of refinishing a wall in my basement, and it was just a beer I was drinking and kind of just sampling, but not really paying much attention to, unfortunately. Some of their other beers that are really interesting. They're the only place that I know that makes an India brown ale. And it's a malty brown ale, like typically is, but it has more flavor and character to it than, you know, a lot of brown ales. And at the dinner with Dogfish, we had it paired up with the salad, and it was a really good match.
I definitely have to try that one. I know that you also have a bottle, I don't know if you've tried it yet, of the Liqueur de Malt, which is Dogfish Head's malt liquor.
Yes, yes, I actually did drink my Liqueur de Malt. We had it at a Poker Hold'em game night. This beer was 100% awesome, not because of the way it was delivered. Liqueur de Malt, it was a malt liquor. It was brewed with three different kinds of corn, not barley malt like you would expect in a beer. But I'll argue with you that it was the world's best malt liquor. It tasted good. It was enjoyable.
What, better than Mickey's?
Yes, better than Mickey's. But the good part is they packaged it in a 40 with a red screw top. And when you bought it at the bottle shop, they gave it to you in a hand-stamped paper bag. The hand-stamped said Dogfish Head Craft Brewery on it, but it gave you in a paper bag. So you could just take it out on the counter, take it out on the sidewalk. You know, I wanted to pour some out for my fallen homies. But but drinking it, it was a startling good beer. I bought it for the Kitsch Factor. And I wouldn't buy it to drink all the time, but it was drinkable. It was good. It's a little bit strong, but it wasn't as strong as this this 9% Imperial IPA that we're drinking.
Right.
Another interesting beer they make is called Aprahop. It is, I would say, if I wanted to sum it up really short, it's a fruit beer done right. It's not overly fruity, has some apricots in it, but it's like it's a fruit IPA. So it's hoppy too. It's a good drinkable beer, and it goes good with we had it with barbecue.
Yeah.
Barbecue chicken, cornbread, and some rice, and
I imagine that fruitiness would really help the rest of the barbecue taste. Sort of yes. Heightens up the other tastes.
A couple of their other beers that I found quite interesting was their Old School barley wine. Very hoppy, not your traditional barley wine. Had a very grainy taste. And the brand new beer that everyone's looking for, but you can't find it too many places yet, is their Burton Baton, which is their oak aged Imperial IPA.
I'm really interested in that. I like the oak-aged beers. Gives it a different sort of character, which is sort of a little hard to describe.
Okay. I think that's all we're going to have about Dogfish Head. If you guys have any questions, you can email us at... Let's pick an email address real quick.
Well, let's say beer@craftbeerradio.com.
Sure thing. We already secured the domain name, so you guys can't take that away from us. And we have a little bit of website there, but we're probably going to put up some blogging software so it's easy to put up our show notes. And, well, obviously that's where you're going to find the podcast feeds for this. We're going to have direct downloads, and I also set up a BitTorrent tracker. So hopefully you and the know-how can save us some bandwidth by getting it off of BitTorrent.
Please. Our next beer is Stouts Double IPA from Stouts Brewing Company in...
Adamstown, Pennsylvania.
Adamstown, Pennsylvania.
It is, I haven't driven there from Philly, but I would guess it's about 45 minutes to an hour northwest of Philly. It's hour and a half to 2 hours east of Harrisburg, I think.
Definitely a smaller distribution area. We're talking mostly about the mid-Atlantic states here. Up to Connecticut, down to Virginia, and essentially that's it. As you might have heard, Jeff is running to get a bottle opener because our current one isn't working. So I will continue to describe this beer. It has an alcohol of 10%. 10% alcohol in this beer, which is more than 9% in the 90-minute IPA. A bitterness of 75 IBU as opposed to the Dogfish Head 90-minute, which has 90 IBUs. Again, this is also, we prefer a snifter as the glassware for this particular beer.
We're not filling the glass the whole way up. We're just putting a little bit in, trying to pour it with a decent head so it traps some aroma. And we're swirling it around a little bit before we drink it, because we want to enjoy the aroma in this beer.
This is definitely a stronger head than the 90-minute. It foamed up a little bit higher, and it is not dissipating as quickly.
Color-wise, this is a very nice orange color. It's fairly cloudy, and it has a nice head building on it, nice thick bubbles. Not so much creamy, but a nice solid head.
Definitely a much different aroma than the 90-minute. I'd almost describe the aroma as creamy in a sense. It's a little bit easier on the palate, I suppose, for the nose.
I wasn't able to find any gravity readings for either of these beers on their websites. The gravity readings are the specific gravity, which means how dense they are compared to water before they're fermented, when all the sugars are in them, and after, when the sugars are turned to alcohol. For people in the know, that's a little helpful for them getting an idea on how full the beer tastes in your mouth and things like that.
I definitely see what you mean by having a little bit more of the grapefruit taste. Also, just a general citrusiness that is a little bit more pronounced than in the 90 Minute.
Yeah, I would say this beer is a lot more grainy. Do you get that? I'm not sure. I mean, if that's the best way to describe it, but I definitely get grainy.
The mouthfeel is definitely different. It's not as soft as the 90 Minute. Yeah, I feel what you're talking about.
Since this beer is the same style as the last one, we recommend serving it at the same temperature, 50 to 55 degrees. I even did some calculation for you international listeners. That's 10 to 12 degrees Celsius. Their website is stoutsbeer.com. That's STOUDTS beer.com. Their annual production is 10,000 barrels a year, so that's roughly half of what Dogfish Head does.
Which is interesting because Dogfish Head has a much wider distribution area, but Stouts seems to deliver more beer for the smaller area that it's delivering it to.
Yeah, you can say. I mean, we're from Pittsburgh, and Stouts has a fairly good penetration in the market. I mean, I shouldn't say penetration because Budweiser has penetration.
Right.
But they have a good representation in the market. What do we want to say about Stouts? They've been around for 17 years. Which is longer than I would have expected, because they make some quality beers. And 17 years ago, there wasn't much market for these beers. I'm curious how much they have changed over the years, whether they've gone from a little more mainstream and normal beers, and these big beers are more recent. Because over this past year, it's the first time I've had and seen this double IPA, so it might be a new beer. I should have done that research for the show.
I'm noticing, back to the beer, that the aftertaste is significantly different from the 90 Minute. It's much more of a malty taste to sort of end the beer. And it does, like all IPAs, it ends with a little bit of hoppiness, but that's much later on.
Yeah, yeah. When it's just starting to go down your throat, it tastes really full, and then the malty that Greg mentioned comes out. Some of the other beers from Stouts that I really enjoy... They have a lager that comes out in the springtime called the Blonde Double Maibock. Maiboks are one of the hoppier lagers you're going to find. And while me being a hophead, if you haven't figured it out yet, definitely a good beer. One of the most original beers that they make, I haven't had anything else that does the same thing, is their Fat Dog Stout. It is the only Imperial Oatmeal Stout that I've had, that I've been able to find anywhere.
Imperial Oatmeal Stout.
Right, so it's a strong beer like an Imperial Stout, but instead of being dry, like a lot of Imperial Stouts are, it has a very creamy and full mouthfeel.
That definitely sounds interesting. Now, we should mention that some of the... You may think of creamy stout, you may think of something like Guinness, which is actually... The creaminess is more attributed to the fact that it's nitrogenated.
Yes, yes. The Guinness and some of the other beers from the United Kingdom are poured on a flow control system, which... mixes nitrogen and carbon dioxide in the tap. The nitrogen bubbles in the beer make it creamier and smoother, and it's part of the profile that they're looking for in the beer. You can find American microbrews that are done on nitro. Most of the time, the nitro seems to wash out the flavor of the beer, but if you're looking for a good nitro American craft beer, look for Old Dominion Oak Barrel Stout. If you like Guinness and you're scared of some of these other beers, try Old Dominion Oak Barrel Stout. It is by far the best nitro stout that I've had.
Good to know. What other things have you had from Stouts?
I've had their triple, which is a Belgian style. Belgian triples are typically on the very sweet side. Mm-hmm. They have the Belgian yeast give them all kinds of crazy flavors, from bananas to cloves to flowers, to fruit. It's Belgians are interesting. If you haven't heard much about Belgians, there's a whole world of Belgian-style beers, and they have all kinds of character.
Absolutely. I used to be very into Belgian beers. Not so much lately, but they're very distinctive in their style, and you definitely know when you're having a Belgian as opposed to another type of beer.
All right. Do we have anything else that we need to say about stouts?
Well, you know, the head still hasn't dissipated. That's something to notice. I mean, this is a long-lasting head on this beer.
Yeah, we have nice lacing on the sides of our glasses. For lacing is where the little foam bubbles are on the side of the glass, and it kind of looks a little bit like lace. It's typically a sign of a nice, resilient head on the beer. And we still have, you know, I have about an eighth of an inch of foam covering the top of my beer. And, I mean, it's not a huge, big thing to have head on your beer still. But when we're enjoying the aroma in a beer like this, you know, those CO2 bubbles there help maintain the aroma. So give it a little swirl, get it up to, you know, quarter inch, half inch of head, take a big whiff, and just, and love the hops. Gotta love the hops.
Gotta love the hops. Now, like all IPAs, this is sweet, but I don't notice quite the syrupiness in the stouts that I did in the 90-minute. It just doesn't seem to be as pronounced, that sort of thick, syrupy sweetness. What would you say is your favorite of the two?
My favorite of the two? I like the stouts. I like the very grainy flavor. I've become so accustomed to these in-your-face IPAs. Maybe my palate's spoiled to some of the subtler ones. It also depends on my mood. I had a 60-minute the other night, and it fit the spot good. But not like tonight. Yeah, I definitely like those Stouts Double IPAs.
I tend to agree with you. I would definitely choose, if I had to make the choice, the Stouts Double over the 90-minute. Now, I'm not saying that either that the 90-minute is a bad beer by any stretch of the imagination, but I believe the Stouts is more to my liking.
And if you live in the distribution area, or even more appropriately, if you live in Pennsylvania where you have to buy 24 bottles of this stuff at one time, the price is quite reasonable. When I picked up my case, I was really surprised. I saw a 10% alcohol beer. I assumed it was going to be $50 or so, but we were able to pick it up for $33 or $36, I think, which, you know, case of Victory Hop Devil is $27. So you're getting, you know, whole beer of, you know, same, just as good quality, but, you know, different flavor profile. And, I mean, if you want to pay for the alcohol, you can. That's not one of my motivations. But when I do get a higher alcohol beer, you know, I expect to pay, you know, $40, $50, maybe even $60 for it, so...
Sometimes, if you are into the alcohol, you certainly can have less of these for and get the same sort of effect. But, I mean, I imagine if you're into alcohol, you're not so much into the flavor of the beer.
A lot of you aren't going to believe me, but I've told my friends that, you know, I won't say that I wish that beer didn't have alcohol, because in a beer like the Stouts, where there's so much alcohol in it, it actually gives you a flavor to the beer. There's a little bit of warming flavor to the beer, which we should have mentioned when we were reviewing the thing. That's an important flavor. I would say I wish alcohol didn't get me drunk, because I'll go to the bar and I want to try some of the new beers they have that I've never had before. I'll drink three of these beers that are over 7% alcohol, and I'm impaired. I can't enjoy the beers fully, and you know, my wife's always the designated driver. She doesn't drink much beer, so don't worry about me making my way home after being impaired. But you know, I wish I could try the other three or four beers that they have there that are on my to try list. Those.
Oh, by the way, is the Stouts, is this bottle conditioned? I believe the
Stouts is bottle conditioned. Being 10%, you could put this, buy a case of this beer, you could put it down for 3 or 4 years and taste it throughout that time and notice how the beer's character changes. It's not going to go bad on you because the yeast will keep the beer fresh and alive. And the hops will tone out some over that time. And yeah, it's always a fun experiment to pick up a case of beer and drink one or two a month until it's gone, and notice how the beer changes when you have a nice bottle-conditioned beer like this.
Very good. So those were our two beers. Now, those are two double IPAs. Now, what are some other double IPAs people could think about picking up if they can't find these?
Sure. There's some other great Imperial IPAs. I'm going to name some of the ones that I've had and I really enjoy. One of my other favorites is the Rogue Ales I2PA. It's an Imperial India Pale Ale. They just do it in shorthand notation, so you have an I2PA. And they're out of Oregon, and you can get them anywhere in the country pretty much. Maybe not the I2PA, but if you ask your bottle shop or distributor for it, I'm sure you'll be able to pick some of that up. Stone, out of San Diego, has one called Ruination IPA. It is another really hoppy IPA, just like these. On the bottle, Stone always likes to have fun with their labels, and it's called Ruination because it's going to ruin your palate. After you drink that, you're not going to want to drink any normal IPAs ever again, they say.
Stone's definitely, they like to engage in a lot of hyperbole. You should see their 8th anniversary bottle, which has a whole bunch of words that I don't know if you can find any person on earth who knows the definition of all these words without looking at a dictionary.
Yeah, they do that with every anniversary beer. And, yeah, their labels are fun. Yeah, they have a beer called Arrogant Bastard. That's fairly popular, so you might have heard of it. And you might have even read the label, but it says right on the top, if you like fizzy yellow beer, you're not going to like this one.
That's the truth.
Victory Brewing in Downingtown, Pennsylvania makes a beer called Hop Wallop. It's a winter seasonal that came out 2 years ago. It's another Imperial IPA. Three Floyds in Indiana makes a Dreadnought IPA. On this list, I'm looking at other double IPAs. The rest of them are pretty much regionally available, the top ones, so I'm not going to mention two of those. For the Northeast, Smutty Nose makes an IPA that's pretty good.
And let's go on to some craft brewing history, because we are craft beer radio.
Right.
So we should talk about...
Oh, yeah, I was looking on making this segment. Why craft beer?
Yeah, okay.
And what is craft beer?
So, Jeff, what is craft beer?
I feel that craft beer is beer produced from a brewery or brewer who dedicates themselves to making beer that they feel is good and interesting and appeals to the people who like sampling the varieties of beer. I don't say just good beer because, well, people who drink Budweiser think Budweiser is a good beer. There's also the motivation behind the brewing. I feel that if a brewery is brewing to get the biggest return on investment, to make a beer that appeals to the largest audience possible with the lowest investment and has the highest return for their shareholders, I typically call that a macro brewery. Bud, Miller, Coors, even smaller ones. I might even include Yingling and Sam Adams in those. Sam Adams makes some good seasonals. Yingling is a regional brewery, but they don't put out anything that really strives to be interesting. And they just put out their Yingling Lager and a couple mediocre versions of porters and black and tans. But craft breweries, you know, put out these flavorful beers. They don't have to put out a lot of beers, but they put out beer that, you know, what am I trying to say?
Well, a craft brewery is always experimenting. They have a couple beers that are their standards, and they have recipes for them. But most of the craft brew places that I know of are constantly trying to put out something different. They'll have seasonal beers. They'll have different types of beers, and they'll just throw out there and see if they catch on or not. They're trying to do something different with their beers all the time. They don't have one specific type of beer and just throw that out.
That's a great point, Greg. For an example of someone who doesn't do that, here in Pittsburgh we have Iron City Brewing, or Pittsburgh Brewing Company, who puts out Iron City beer. Instead of them trying to put out a different beer that actually has flavor, they decided to put out their Iron City in aluminum bottles and let that marketing sell beer instead of, you know, taking a risk and putting out some kind of ale that has flavor to it.
And to a certain extent, I can understand, because like you said, Iron City is going for the money. They're in it because they believe they can get a lot of money for a local beer that's cheaper than the macro brews, but will appeal to the largest amount of people. You're not... I mean, I have a friend who will only drink these lagers, these adjunct lager-style beers, because that's the only thing he likes. And I've tried to get him to understand and to appreciate other beers, but he has a one mindset. That's the only type of beer he's drinking. And I think that a lot of people, they just were brought up on this type of beer, and that's what they think of as beer. And anything else, it's hard for them to sort of rationalize it. It's something that they can appreciate.
Sure. And the other part of the question was, why craft beer? Why do we advocate? Why are we enthusiasts for craft beer?
Well, there's a simple answer, and that's because we like it.
Well, we like it. But it's also, for me, it's part of my personality, too. I root for the underdog. I like things that aren't mainstream. And, you know, I want to see every one of these great beer makers succeed. You know, every case that they sell that one of the big three brewers don't sell, you know, makes me smile, because it, you know, people are waking up that there's beer with more flavor out there. And granted, that's not everyone's alley. Some people want beer just as a vehicle to deliver the alcohol. But others who want to enjoy the flavor, you know, there might be people out there that don't know that these beers exist. So that's part of why we're having this radio show.
Right. And I like to make the comparison of beer as a lot like cheese. There are different types of cheese. There's hard cheese and there's soft cheese. And there's different types of beer. There's lager and there's ales. But in amongst those, you know, there's not just one type of lager and one type of ale. There are huge variations between them. Most of what people drink are these adjunct lagers, these Budweiser, Coors. They're very specific type. It's like if you only had American cheese for the rest of your life, and you tried to have a different type of cheese, and you wouldn't know it was necessarily cheese. You wouldn't know it was good cheese because you've only been drinking, you've only been eating American cheese. It's if you've only had Budweiser and you haven't had anything else, and something hits you and says, this is beer, you're probably going to be like, wait a minute. But if you just keep it up and start trying, you'll notice that there's so many different flavors out there, so much to experience. And that's really why I love craft beer, because there's so much out there. I love trying new things. I love almost all types of food, and I love almost all types of beer in the same sense.
Greg is much more eloquent than I can be. I need to prepare statements. He's pretty good at speaking, so we're going to let him do a lot of that talking on the next episode, I think. It seems to flow a lot better.
Okay.
But hey, I think this went rather well for our first episode.
I think so, too.
I might even post this one.
It might be worth it to edit it down a bit, obviously, but to show it as sort of our pre-episode episode.
Sure. And why waste these two good beers for just our own enjoyment when maybe 3 or 4 people might download this and listen to it?
Maybe. Who knows?
Who knows? Doesn't seem to be too many beer shows out there. There's two that I listen to that I enjoy. I was hoping that I could start this and come at a little bit of a different angle. I'm not saying what they do is bad, I know, because it's the same feel. You know, anyone who's, getting people to recognize these different kinds of beer and about the craft beer industry, you know, they're all friends of mine. But, you know, I just thought maybe there'd be a little bit more room. You know, because you listen to those two podcasts, and, you know, that's only 2 hours a week. You know, I listen to a lot more podcasts than that, so hopefully there's room on your RSS feed for us.
And if you want to contact us at beer@craftbrewradio.com or greg@craftbrewradio.com.
Or jeff@craftbrewradio.com.
Or really anything at craftbrewradio.com.
Oh, I wouldn't say that. Now we're going to get them signing us up for all kinds of spam and stuff.
Well, let's hope you don't sign us up for all types of spam and stuff.
All right. Excellent. Well, thank you. And I hoped you'd enjoyed this. Hopefully it wasn't too rambling. We're going to go back and listen to this and take notes. We didn't prepare all the segments properly because we just wanted to see how this felt. So we promise that the next installment of Craft Beer Radio is going to be smoother. Whether it's going to be super duper, not sure yet, but it's going to be smoother than this one.
That's more up to you than it is up to us. But thanks for listening.
Thank you very much. Goodbye.